This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, we're gearing up for our biggest trade show of the year in the automotive industry. It's called SEMA, the Specialty Equipment Market Association trade show. It's in Las Vegas. I will be there on the Shell Pioneering Performance stage. Last year, I interviewed 125 icons of the automotive industry, and when it comes to pioneering the automotive aftermarket, one of those guys that is pioneering constantly is Dan Sandberg from Brembo Brakes. He's the president and CEO. Dan, you know, last week I had you on the show, we touched on something, and it kind of was rolling around in my head like the roulette wheel ball, you know, just around and around it went. Electric cars, and every time I open my Facebook, somebody else is test driving some electric car, you know, e-tron from Audi, the F-Pace or the I-Pace from Jaguar, and, you know, it's everybody's got something coming out electric, and you guys are staying right up with it. But then, you know, what about this... what's that? Formula E. What about that? You got anything going on there?
I'm still kind of stunned here. I'm picturing you in a raccoon hat as a pioneer.
Not that kind of pioneer. Well, those are the original pioneers. Today's
on the
pioneers.
Shell stage. That's. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just focusing on
You know what? I'm
going
to get one now. I'm going to get one just to stand. But today's pioneers are, you know, they're wearing the white lab coats like your guys.
Yep.
So Formula E, what's going on with that? You guys are in that.
Yeah, we are in that. We're the exclusive brake supplier for Formula E. And you know what those are? Those are like, I don't know, they're like electric formula cars.
Right.
Imagine that. So, you know, the Formula One fans, if you like the noise, might not be for you because they don't make a lot of noise.
Right.
But they go really, really fast. And they're heavier because of the batteries in them.
Right.
And the race is a new you know, you have a kind of a different dynamic. Do you remember when we were in Pebble Beach talking to Jay Leno, and
yeah,
we were talking to him about electric motorbikes?
Right.
You know, motorcycles. And it's an interesting dynamic because you not only have to be careful how you drive, you know, where, how you're turning, where, you know, you are in the turn and in the speeds that you have and looking out backwards, forwards, in front of you, sides.
Right.
But you got to worry about running out of braking power. And electric power.
Can you imagine? And I have to think, like you said, they're heavier. So the physics is a little different going into the corners and all, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean,
some would say it might be better because of the weight. You can distribute that weight better. And, you know, those guys are, you know, where the weight is really, really important when you're racing.
Right. So brakes, I mean, what kind of brakes? You know, my Viper has carbon ceramic Brembo brakes on it. They're freaking unbelievable. Scary. That's what they are because they're so good. You know, it's nice having horsepower. You know, I have a Demon too that has Brembos and I have 840 horsepower.
Are there any brakes left in that Demon?
Yeah, because I don't use the brakes that much. I don't go to the drag strip. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Do as I say, not as I do. The point is that I know that you have to have gigantic brakes on these cars. What kind of brakes are on these Formula E race cars?
You know, they have some nice sized brakes, but not as big as you'd think they are because, you know, weight is a big deal.
Yeah.
All right. And we have lightweight brakes. All of our brake systems are aluminum or some type of alloy of aluminum. And obviously, the lightest brakes in the world are carbon brakes. And the lighter, the better for these guys because, again, they got to be able to go as fast as they can, but as long as they can. If they don't plan that out right, they don't finish.
You know, it's funny. You said all our brakes are aluminum, right? You're talking about the rotor or the caliper is aluminum.
The caliper.
The rotor. The rotors can be like mine, carbon ceramic, and God knows what else they're making them out of these days. I'm sure it's a blend of some sort.
Well, you have the carbons. You know, you have carbon ceramic. You have carbon-carbon, which is a little bit different. But you also have even your iron brakes, the brakes that, you know, you and I have in our day-to-day driving cars.
Right.
Those are even made what we call two-piece brakes, all right? So the hat section, the section that attaches actually to the hub of the car, is actually made of either a stamped steel or lightweight aluminum, and they're two-piece, and then you attach the iron, you know, the iron disc to it. So, you know, those are getting high-tech too, and they're becoming lighter and lighter. You know, that's the name of the game these days. Whether you're even driving the cars that we drive day-to-day or a race car. You want to have it light so you can get better mileage and also better handling.
All right, I'm playing this song just for you, brother.
Okay.
I don't know if you know who it is right out of the gate. Let's just see if you can figure it out, because if you don't have good brakes, what are you doing? What are you doing if you don't have good brakes? You're living on a prayer, brother. That's right. Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. Get yourself a set of Brembo brakes. There's going to be some news. We'll be talking about it right here on The Drive. Dan Sandberg, CEO of Brembo. Thank you, bro.
Thank you.
Fun stuff. I'm Alan Taylor. It is The Drive.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance. Well, it is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show is brought to you in part by Bridgestone. They're passionate about making tires you can count on to perform when it matters most. And, you know, sometimes it matters most when you have, the least rolling resistance on an electric car. We were talking about electric cars. How they build tires anymore. A tire isn't just a tire. It used to be just a black thing on the rim. And nowadays, you know, you buy a tire for summer. You buy a tire for winter. You buy a tire if you got an electric car. It's a certain kind of tire. You have high performance tires, speed rated tires. My Demon has sticky tires. I got 4,000 miles on it, and the tires are already worn out. Well, it's because I'm burning out everywhere, but another story. George Kennedy's joining us. He is co-founder of Car Tender and freelance automotive journalist. Car Tender, Car Gurus. He writes for Boston Globe and others. CarTender.com, CarGurus.com, Boston.com, section cars. Just find George Kennedy. He's got good stuff. Oh, George has a YouTube channel, too. What's your YouTube channel, George?
Well, as of right now, it's just stuff I do for Car Gurus. So,
oh, okay. It's on Car Gurus. All right.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, I'm one of the guys that does their reviews. So, a lot of fun.
Low rolling resistance tires. You know, we drove an electric car early on, and the tires were like so hard, because a softer tire, obviously friction physics is at work. And when you want low rolling resistance, then the tire has to be a little harder. Obviously, it's kind of like the difference between when I was a kid, when we had Stingrays, and then all of a sudden we started driving these 10 speeds with these little thin tires, and man, you felt every bump in the road. Anyway. So what have you been up to?
It's funny, speaking of low rolling resistance, one of my favorite stories about low rolling resistance tires, that Hiro Toyota, the executive for Toyota, insisted that the FRS, now Toyota 86, have the Prius tires on it because it's easier to break them away and get a little bit of skid going.
Oh, that's funny, right? I mean, that's what I'm saying. Remember when we were kids, tires were tires. And I remember my dad asked me one time, my dad had a Peugeot 504 diesel. He's always loved diesels.
Oh, man.
And he says to me, go down and go to Sears and Roebuck and buy me some tires at the Sears Service Center, of which I think there's still a lot of them out there, but probably not for long. But anyway, I went down there and I said, the man wants to know what kind of tires you want. He says, well, buy whatever came on the car from the factory. And so I said that to the guy, and he says, well, those are more expensive. And I said to my dad, they're more, he goes, I don't care. You got to have the tires that are on the car from the factory. And this is my dad, who was not a big car guy at all, but he had enough kind of wherewithal to make sure that he had the right tires. Now, friends of mine at Tire Rack, TireRack.com, they were sponsoring the show for years. You see them now on all the news channels because they became so big. They have experts. They will not sell you a wrong tire for your car. In other words, if you try and buy some big goofy tire for your car and they go, no, that would be dangerous because those are way too big. And, you know, we can't sell that to you. They kind of have standards because really the car is engineered with the tire in mind. I mean, the tire that's on the car is part of the engineering. They're all they all work together
it's
to make
it's
sure
such a huge component.
It
of
is
it. Yeah.
It's huge.
For, you know, even you know your daily crossover performance car. It is you know it's the only four parts of the car that touch the road. So all of that suspension component, body rigidity, you know, hybrid drivetrain, performance drivetrain, all that stuff. You know, the choke point is the tire. So if it's a good tire, it's going to help it. The bad tire, it's going to hinder all of the stuff that went into that car.
It's funny because how much of the suspension these days is the tire? Because, you know, it used to be, you know, you had shock absorbers. And now today, it's like that tire, the air pressure in the tire is all part of the engineering of the car. How many air? Like, I'll give you an example. I got in my Viper and it's getting cold outside. And so I thought, I better take it out for a little, you know, run because it's going to get cold and it's going to start raining and I won't want to drive it. And the tire pressure monitoring system, tire pressure, TPMS. Yeah, I know. I had to think about that. Anyway, it shows me the tire pressure of all my tires. And actually, a light came on and said, you need to put air pressure in your front tires. They're too low. And I thought to myself, isn't that great? We live in a world today where you really, you know, you don't put yourself in harm's way the way we used to. You know, somebody had to go, hey, Mac, your tire's low. Oh, geez. All right. We're going to take a little break. This song is for you, brother, the Dancing Queen. It's ABBA.
Oh, gee, thanks.
We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
My dad is a proud doer, always building, repairing, or maintaining something. He relies on Craftsman tools, and I do the same. Today, Craftsman mechanics tools, metal storage, and lighting are available from your favorite retailers. But that's only the beginning. A full line of retooled and refined products are on the way. Find your favorite store at craftsman.com and stay tuned for more big news from this trusted American brand.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, our show brought to you in part by Craftsman, Craftsman Tools. We build pride. Have you noticed there's a little something different in the world of Craftsman Tools these days? They've actually got a new color, believe it or not. No, don't worry about it. It's still red, but it's freaking red now. I mean, it is bright, crazy red. Craftsman has been purchased. We were talking about Sears Roebuck. They bought the Craftsman brand and all of its trust and love that people had for it from Sears, that is Stanley Black & Decker did, for, I don't know, like $1 billion or something. And now they've kind of, I can't say they've reinvented, they've just improved it, and it's available in more places. So we appreciate Craftsman working with us all these years. George Kennedy's joining us. Back to you, George. What's going on?
Hey, yeah, you know, it's funny. Before, you know, I came on, I heard you guys talking about electric cars, and it's funny. I'm sort of in the works putting together a story on this really interesting guy who is taking a whole different tact on the electric industry. His name is Rich Rebuild, or that's what his YouTube channel is. And he's kind of well known in the electric car community because he's the guy that took two salvaged Teslas. One was from a wreck. One was a water salvage. Put them together and made a brand new car.
Mm. You know, that's my world of salvage. I owned a wrecking yard. Oh, let me think about it for a second. Almost 40 years ago when I was a young guy, I bought a wrecking yard that was going to be closed down because the guy was dealing drugs. And I went up there and I saw the guy and I said, hey, I saw you on the news last night getting taken away in handcuffs. He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm out on bail. I'm probably going to get 7 to 10. And I go, well, I don't get it. What are you going to do with this place? He goes, shut it down.
I said, well, what will you get for all the crush? I mean, all kinds of classic cars and stuff. This was, you know, of course, in the early 80s. And he said, I don't know, you know, $5,000. And I'm thinking to myself, I had just sold a car and I had like, you know, $7,000 in my pocket. I said, well, so if I gave you $5,000, you'd be happy and I'll take over? He goes, you got $5,000? I pulled a big wad of cash out. I go, yep. I said, where's the landlord? He said, across the street in the travel trailer. And of course, you know, I went over and he owed 2 months back rent, the guy that was going to jail. So I made a deal with the landlord, got an option to buy at that point as well. My brother's in real estate, so I knew what that was. And there was no internet, so I had to go down to like the stationery store and go through all these drawers. I remember these funny drawers, really narrow drawers, like 30 drawers in a row, looking for the right, you know, option to buy. So I went back up, I bought it. I ran it for a couple of years, sold it for, you know, a lot of money. And that's what started me out in the car world. But we used to sell a lot of cars that were what they considered not worth fixing. Cars that were hit from the rear were the best ones that people would buy. Like you would buy like this guy. Imagine he'd buy one, a Tesla that got rear-ended, and then buy a flood car that was a rear. You take the rear end of the flood car, weld it to the part of the Tesla that's still good through the C-pillar and through the floor, the C-pillar being that back where the back glass goes in. And,
well, that's,
you know, yeah,
what he was able to do was take the frame from the salvage one and a lot of the running gear, pretty much all of the running gear from the collision car. And the tough thing is, you know, you look back at the salvage car stuff, you know, if I wanted to go put together, you know, another one of my 2000 Jeep Cherokees, you know, out of a half, you know, destroyed car, I can go cobble together out of a few cars and go open up the Haynes manual, go on, you know, a couple of websites and get all the parts. You don't have that with Tesla. With Tesla, they only want their licensed distributors or service departments working on those. You also can't buy parts for it either.
Wait a minute. You can't buy parts for a Tesla?
If you want to go in and say, hi, I own this Tesla. I'd like another side mirror for it because it got
knocked off.
They'll give you it. But if you're the second market, if you're a used guy, if you're doing it with a salvage title, oh, you're not the owner? Sorry, we can't do that.
Wow.
Oh, you're not the owner? Well, sorry, we can't unlock the car for you remotely, stuff like that.
Wow.
So he's been hitting a lot of brick walls with regards to Tesla because they are – I mean, look, they're a new company, you know, they're very tech heavy. And so they sort of take the Silicon Valley approach to things where it's the technology is the guarded part, not the engineering almost. So, you know, you go in to get a Chevy, you can get whatever you want out of there. You can open up the code and get stuff out of that. Not so for Tesla. So he has to get pretty crafty about how he puts together the cars, how he's able to unlock stuff. He reaches out to previous owners, gets consent for them to give keys and stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of hoops to jump through, but the result is that he's able to build a brand new Model S that would have gone for plus $100,000, and he's able to put it together for, you know, $30,000 to $40,000 plus a whole lot of man hours.
Right. I got it. So maybe he bought a flood car and took all the components. All he had was the shell. That makes more sense.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and the thing is, you still have to. They have what's called a branded title. You still have to disclose. So my guess is the car is worth less no matter what. But if you want a Tesla, then you've got also extra parts and things because you're going to have two cars. And with all of the flooding that went on and, you know, this with these all these disasters they've had lately, my guess is there were some Teslas that got flooded out. Very interesting.
Yeah,
well, so
I mean,
it's the story's going to run, in Boston Globe?
Yeah, Boston.com, you know, look under the cars section. It should be running, you know, by this weekend or next.
Yep, all right.
And the guy's name is Rich Rebuilds, has a really cool YouTube channel. It's been a really cool story to cover.
Rich Rebuilds. I'm going to have to go check that out. Hang tight. I want to hear about this Jaguar E-Pace and the electric version, the I-Pace. Talking to George Kennedy, it is the Drive-A-Mail, and Taylor, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
You can spend this fall hauling bags of leaves to the curb or hauling. Hurry in to your local Dodge dealership for great deals on Dodge Charger with 292 horsepower and 30 mpg highway. Dodge Challenger, the most affordable V8 in its class. And Dodge Durango. This fall, Get great deals at your local Dodge dealership. EPA estimated MPG. Actual results may vary based on Ward's Middle Specialty segment. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Our show is brought to you in part by Dodge Domestic, not domesticated. Hey, they've started building the Red Eye. What is that? Well, it's in between a Hellcat and a Demon. 797 horsepower. If I ever sell my Demon, I'm going to buy a Red Eye. You know, they only built that Demon, that Dodge Demon, the 840 horsepower, the one I have, 1 year only. 1 year only car. And the Red Eye is, you know, it's pretty close. It looks the same. It's got a different hood. Got a lot of, there's actually a lot of differences that the average person would never know. Anyway, it's called the Red Eye. They've started building it. If you wanted a Demon and couldn't get it, or you want something that's a little more than 707 horsepower in the Hellcat, 797. God, unbelievable. In the Dodge Red Eye. It's a Challenger Red Eye. George Kennedy joining us from Car Gurus, Boston Globe, Cartender. And are you still working with U.S. News and World Report, too?
I certainly am, yeah.
Dude, man, you get around.
Yeah, I'm doing everything for everybody, yeah.
No, that's nice. Good. That's what
paid.
A freelancer, that's right. He can work for anybody he wants. That's the beauty of it. All right, you're driving right now the 2019 Jaguar E-Pace. First of all, my wife says to me, she's driving a Fiat 500 Abarth. I mean, this car is like a ladybug. It's a little itty-bitty little car. And I think, you know, she's been in one since 2012. We got one. She put 40,000 miles on it. And then I found one. My son found one in the newspaper, actually, with 1,500 miles on it. And so I went and I bought that one. It was cheap. Some old people bought it, and it was like a little too wild for them. And so I sold hers, and now she's – so what is that? 6 years in a Fiat 500 Abarth, right? She's going, wow. I think I want something a little bit bigger now that we've got a grandbaby.
A little bit more space.
A little more space. And, you know, by the way, grandchildren are just cool. That's all there is to it. So I got her first one, my 25-year-old daughter, had a baby with my son-in-law. And, man, I'm having fun. But, yes, time to upgrade. And I told her, I said, you know what? There are some really nice premium SUVs out there that are not really horribly priced. And if you start pricing SUVs and crossover vehicles, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, like an inexpensive one's 30 and a real expensive one's 130, but anywhere in between but in the 50s, in the about the $50,000 range, you can buy some really nice stuff. I don't know what this one costs. I haven't driven it. How much does it cost, first of all, and then tell us about it?
Well, this is right in that sweet spot. As you said, it's a 2019 Jaguar E-Pace. It's the SE trim, MSRP for $44,300, but with all the options, you're looking at $54,300. So as you said, right in that sweet spot.
Right. So what do you think about it? Now, you're a big guy. What are you, 6'2" or something?
Yeah, 6'3". And what's funny is, you know, I've squeezed into Fiats before.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for someone with a little more space and you still want to be able to have fun driving, the E-Pace is a great option. The difference is compared to other small compact SUVs is that it actually has some power to get out of its own way. Mm. You know, you look at the Mercedes GLA 250, and that thing's just wheezing to try and move around. It doesn't really handle that well. The Jaguar E-Pace, it's got a 2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder. Makes 246 horsepower. That's enough to get out of the way. It's got a dynamic driving system, so you can click it into comfort or snow and ice. And then it's a dynamic, which is sport mode. And you click it into dynamic, and the thing picks right up. And it drives and handles as good as any, you know, performance-oriented vehicle could be. Not an out-and-out sports car, but, you know, as good as a performance-oriented sedan.
Well, they use a lot of aluminum, Jaguar. Has this car got a lot of aluminum?
Yeah, it's a largely aluminum construction. The other thing that helps it, too, is that it's kind of stout, so the body's rigid. So they're able to do sort of the adaptive suspension, adaptive steering. And once again, the tires play a big role. It's got these big, big wheels. And I think I want to see what it's got for – I can't see what it's got for tires, but I can tell that they're sort of a all-season, higher performance.
Right.
Which is kind of the nice sweet spot of tire where, you know, it doesn't – you're not into pure summer performance, but it does a lot of things very well.
Let me ask you, were you trying to pun me right there with the tires play a big role?
I wish I was that quick. Yeah. Wish I was that quick, man.
I heard it. So the question is now, Jaguar makes an E-Pace and an I-Pace. What the hell's the difference?
Well, what's funny is, generally speaking, from the driver's seat, you know, not a whole lot different. One is obviously the E-Pace is sort of a subcompact hatchback. The I-Pace is Jaguar's sort of take on rivaling Tesla. It's somewhere between a Model 3 and a Model S, but it's got a bit more of a hatchback shape. So it does offer you a bit of the utility that you might be looking for that you would lose if you went for a pure sedan. It's a pure electric. It starts at 69.5. It does 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds, which is pretty impressive. That is, you know, a couple of weeks ago I drove the Range Rover Sport SVR. That's a 550 horsepower supercharged SUV, and that does 0 to 60 in 4.6. This is all electric, and it'll do it in 4.5.
Wait,
that's impressive.
Where'd you drive the SVR? That's what I want to know.
Oh, I had that, I drove that back here, you know, about a week or two ago
now,
around Boston.
If I remember, I've showed these cars on television, but, I get like 5 minutes with them. The SVR, is this the two-door, they're only going to make 1,000 of them?
No, oh my God. No, that's the SV autobiography.
Okay.
So SV is special vehicles, and it comes in a couple different areas. One is SVX is off-road. SV autobiography is your crazy, lavish, you know, caviar ride.
Right.
And SVR is your sort of performance race ride.
Oh, okay. Nice vehicles, no question about it. The I-Pace and E-Pace, different bodies because one is an electric car. I mean, obviously, it would be E-Pace I if they wanted to use the exact same body, but that must be a difference,
right? They're different vehicles for sure, but you know, within the Jaguar lineup, they're probably the two most similar in terms of rear seat space and then quasi cargo space. Mm-hmm. The big thing to take away from the I-Pace is that where it competes somewhere between the Model 3 and Model S Teslas, those Teslas might accelerate faster. The I-Pace corners better. And for a lot of drivers, and it's got a better ride feel, I think. And I think the interior quality is better. And I think that makes a big difference. The other thing is, if you're cross-shopping this against a Model 3, the controls are far more conventional. So if you don't want that whole sort of massive touchscreen in the center of the Model 3, where that's the only interface with the car, this is far more conventional.
Right. Tesla does some weird stuff with those big, giant screens, almost like a television in the middle. Sometimes too big is too big. All right, George, where can we...
That's cool, but that's not how people interact. Yeah.
That's right. Where can we find stories on these things? Just kind of follow you on the Cartender, Car Gurus, Boston.com stuff?
Yeah, check out Boston.com /section/cars. Check out cargurus.com, U.S. News and World Report, and my website, cartender.com.
Okay, good man. George Kennedy III. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, man.
All right, we're going to be right back with more. I do believe it is my buddy Josh Hancock. Stay with us. Have you ever tried to plan a vacation and the hotel cost, airfare, and pet sitter all add up to one big never mind? Well, it's time to embrace the adventure and go RVing instead. GoRVing.com is your one-stop shop for all things RV camping. Browse the different types of RVs, find a rental agent or dealer near you, and compare the costs. Explore more than 16,000 RV parks and campgrounds nationwide, and even plan your menus for the trip. Find out what you've been missing at GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television, and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Our show brought to you in part by Subaru. We thank them for their sponsorship. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. And welcome. We're glad you're here. Josh Hancock making noise in the background. What was that? What did you do? Smack your phone on the table? What are you doing? You always
I'm not doing anything.
You made a noise.
Always the accusations.
So,
better when we're in the studio together and then we just throw things.
That's because I can reach out and smack you one. What have you been up to, Josh?
Well, first off, where were you last weekend for the Galpin Auto Show?
Well, truthfully, I told them I was going to be there, and Galpin Auto is where we used to have our studio before I got too lazy to go down there every week. They're the biggest Ford dealer in America. They sell more cars, that is, by volume. And Bo Bachman, who's the family, they're friends of Josh and I both. They have an amazing museum. They have the biggest Ed Big Daddy Roth collection. I got to tell you about my Big Daddy Roth story, Josh. And they had an amazing car show. I was going to go. I feel bad, but I thought it was the same weekend as my 40th high school reunion, which is this weekend, tonight, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, I've been dieting. I've been, you know, I've never put my finger down my throat more than I have in the last couple of months because I think I'm going to see an old girlfriend that I, anyway, that's the whole story. I'm joking.
Okay. Let's just, it was their seventh annual and they changed the show. It used to be that they had a night before party and then a show, and they really focus just on the day now.
Yep.
And they turn a group of dealerships in that area. Each dealership has a theme, as in the Ford dealership, they empty it out and they put in high-end Ford race cars, Ford GTs, Shelby Mustangs. The Mazda dealership has all these very unusual Japanese cars. The Volkswagen dealership has Volkswagen. And then Galpin Auto Sports, which is their customization shop, has highly modified automobiles and Hollywood cars. Needless to say, what's changed is they have, and then the public brings cars to a lot. So in the end, they have over 1,000 cars on display. This has become a major show. And can you imagine that they actually empty all those dealerships of cars and move them to lots?
Wow.
Hundreds and hundreds of cars. Then they move in hundreds of cars. And in essence, the dealership really doesn't do a ton of business in 4 days because everybody's working on moving everything around.
Well, the amazing thing is about this particular dealership is in the Jaguar dealer, they have Galpin Jaguar, Galpin Volvo, Galpin Aston Martin on one side of the street. On the other side of the street is the big Ford, Galpin Ford. And so then there's a crosswalk and a street light. And across the street from that is going to be, what is it?
Mazda.
And Mazda on one side, Volkswagen on the other. And if you, and then there's Honda, and then there's Subaru. Like you said, they have everything going. And then they have...
They are building a Porsche store.
Are you kidding? Porsche? Don't get that wrong.
I am not kidding.
Wow.
Porsche.
And they're the certified Shelby dealership, whatever you want to call that, with Galpin Autosport. So, yes, they are massive in every way. They are fantastic because, you know, how many cars have you and I bought from them? I think I've bought with my family a dozen or so in the last, you know, few years. So they're really good at what they do. But the fact is they really care about their customers. What you just said, think of what that cost them. But they also have they have a Starbucks in the Jaguar Volvo dealership.
Yeah.
Nobody else does that. They have their own restaurant called The Carriage. Is that what it's called? The Carriage House or something?
Worthless Carriage.
The horseless carriage, right. So at the Ford dealer, while you're buying your car, and if it's going to take a little while, they'll buy you breakfast. Go in there and have breakfast on us. And the food is fantastic. I go there just for the food. I mean, sometimes I'm driving along. Now let's go over to the horseless carriage. But and they have their own chef, you know.
It's been in the family for 66 years.
Yeah.
I also want to add, you know, they take over a whole hall at LA Auto Show.
Yeah, yeah.
With all their brands that are customized. I mean, this is just a dream to have a dealership that does all this.
All right. Well, let me ask you, what was the one thing that stood out when you did, you know, you went there, you walked around? Was it, what are your memory, your takeaways? What did you see that
was
like,
wow? There's a very famous Lola race car that was in the main Ford store along with Bo's new Ford GT.
What color? What color? What color is the new one?
It is that blue that they showed the car when they announced
it. Yeah, love it. Yeah.
You know, the other thing that, I mean, this hasn't got anything to do with the show except they were all there. One thing that I also noticed is that both Shelby and Roush, and they sell both those brands. We talked about Shelby. Roush is another aftermarket flyer of superchargers, turbochargers. They're in racing. Sure. We know all that. Jack Roush. They are both building modified F-150s.
Oh. Well, Saleen's doing that too, Steve Saleen.
And, you know, you just think, is there enough room in this market of all these modified vehicles? But the answer seems to be yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and John Hennessy's doing that. He's making a 6x6 now. All right, hang tight. You're too legit to quit. MC Hammer, Josh, we're going to come back with more, talk about some news from the Paris Auto Show and all that kind of stuff here on The Drive. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Nobody's taking it away. No, because Hammer don't play
that. You try to get mine, boy. You better step back. Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
There are many words you could use to describe the new Kia Stinger GT. Stunning. Stylish. Sporty. The word breathtaking, however, isn't just an adjective. It's a warning. Because while the ability to go 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds might take your breath away, going 60 to 0 with powerful Brembo brakes will help you catch it again. The 2018 Kia Stinger GT, fueled by youth. Stinger GT rear-wheel drive using launch control with factory-equipped 19-inch wheels. Results may vary. Do not attempt. Always drive safely.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, we thank all our great sponsors. We have Brembo, Dodge, Subaru, Bridgestone, and Craftsman. And also, I don't mention very often, but Shell. I do a lot of work with Shell Pennzoil. We'll be at the SEMA stage at the Specialty Equipment Market Association trade show, known as SEMA. Doing some live broadcasting from there at the end of this month. And big fans of the folks over at Shell. They do a lot of good stuff. Josh Hancock joining us right now. He is the Hollywood car insider, the man that matches the character with the car and all things film and television. Or maybe it's the car with the character.
I am coming to SEMA.
Are you good? Good, good, good. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you out there. Hey, the Paris Auto Show. I did not see anything. You know, I mean, obviously all the, you know, cool concept cars and what have you, that's always really cool. But the one thing that stuck out to me most was the news, of which I have not, because I've been running so much, heard more on. Maybe you can help with BMW has now got a new 3 Series. From what I understand, yeah. can you confirm or deny that they are not going to make a manual transmission in the 3 Series BMW anymore?
They are not going to make it available in the United States.
Good Lord. What are they thinking?
This is one of the core automobiles that needs to have standard transmission in the United States. I mean, I've talked to the dealers, and they were like, well, it's been a bit of a conspiracy because they've cut down. Even when we order them, we can't get them in the past few years.
Interesting.
Their directive is to get people to drive the automatic because they want to save the money. Hmm. They don't want to offer an automatic a stick in the United States because, you know, the take rate has been going down consistently. Sure. But sure. They've also had a hand in making that take rate go down.
Well, but here's the thing. It's a little bit like for everybody around the country and around the world, if you've heard of In-N-Out Burger. You can get a 1, a 2, or a 3, you know, a single, a double, and or whatever the 3 is. Maybe it is the – or what I get. Yeah. They have all these other things you can get too, but they keep it simple, and then that makes their supply chain more simple and the jobs that everybody's doing more simple. Maybe it's that. Or maybe, like you said, this is a conspiracy or it is a trick – for everybody to go, what do you mean BMW is not going to offer a manual transmission? I'm madder than hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, this is the car enthusiast, the lunatic fringe anyway. Listen, I always have a manual transmission something. There's just something fun about shifting through the gears. It's just, I don't know, it's raw, it's fun, it's. But I get it with traffic becoming what it is. Wow, so no manual in the U.S., which means it will be coming later. It's probably just something, you know, for the first whatever number of months to make their.
They want to take it out. Look, I'll give you another example. And they've just released the stats for the motor on the new Ford Ranger pickup truck.
Ah.
And with that is the fact that there are no, there's not a stick available.
Again?
In a truck. In
right.
a truck.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
Hey, first of all, hats off to them, because the reality is, in this case, they're building such bulletproof, amazing transmissions. They can get away with this. And but I don't know. But what about the engine? I got like 1 minute. What engine are they going to offer?
It's the 2.3 EcoBoost that they use in the Mustang.
Four-cylinder, 300 horsepower, 305 or whatever.
It is going to produce 270 horsepower, but the torque figure is at 310 pounds of torque, which is higher than the competition, even though the horsepower is a little bit less.
Well, what they're doing is they're engineering it with more torque because it's a truck, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they do. They're supposed to engineer amazing Ford Tough trucks, right? So do they have any kind of a delivery time of when the Ranger? I know we're supposed to be driving it soon as journalists, but have you heard anything about when it's going to be available for sale?
It's beginning of next year.
Ah, all right. Well, there you go.
Although they have not given specs for SEMA vehicles. There's only going to be three there.
Wow.
Well. Modified.
All right, the Ranger coming back. No manual transmission. BMW making a new 3 Series. No manual transmission. What is the world coming to? Maybe I'll keep my Viper. V10, gigantic engine, manual transmission, 0 to 60, and who the hell cares? You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Josh Hancock, thank you, brother.
Thank you, Alan.
JoshCarr.com. Look him up. He's a good man. He's my friend. I'm your friend. This is The Drive. We got another hour to go. Stay with us. We'll be back after the news.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
You know, with all the canned crap we have, like that voice that just introduced me and the, you know, the whole intro that gets put together, I have my finger on a slide, and when they play that bit of engine revving and driving away, I slide it up so it's a little bit louder because I love it. That's me. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Alan Taylor. This is the second hour of our show. Joining us right now from Kelley Blue Book, Auto Trader, Dealer.com, is the executive publisher, my pal, Carl Brower. Carl and I are co-demoning, you might say. We both have demons, Dodge demons. But, you know, Carl sold his Ford GT, a 2005 Ford GT, bought brand new so that he could afford to buy the new GT coming out. We'll be talking about that because we always do. But we just got done with my buddy Josh Hancock on the other side. How well do you know Josh Hancock, by the way, Carl?
Better than I'd like to.
Oh.
Just kidding. I love Josh. Josh is great. Josh is fabulous. I like him. He knows all the cool people, right? I mean, he's like in with all the movers and shakers. You and I are just kind of hangers-on right there in the middle of all the
you know,
cool people.
You know why, though? Because he made his career in the movie world, if you know what I'm saying, with matching cars with characters and working with Martin Scorsese and all those kind of people. And, you know, he's like, oh, I was hanging around with, you know, whoever. And he names drops, and I'm like, but he really was. But, you know, first and foremost, like all of us, in high school, something happened in the water, I believe. Now, I was a swimmer, a water polo player, and a surfer because I grew up in Southern California. But I do believe that the water I drank somehow shrunk or enlarged my brain. I don't know what happened, and I became a car guy. Same thing happened to you. Same thing happened to Josh.
Yep.
We can't help ourselves, and then we kind of seeked out and destroyed any career opportunity we had that was outside of the car world through the way we spoke and communicated and always couldn't shut up about talking about cars. Now, for those listening, you probably feel the same way. I remember reading Car Craft and Hot Rod and Motor Trend all through high school, and it destroyed me. So I have to be in the car business. You're the same way. So, but here comes this new thing that is happening to us where they're taking away the manual transmissions out of everything. We just got done talking about the new 3 Series BMW out of the Paris Auto Show. The only, I guess I'll say, news that I really went, what? Was the fact that BMW, the driving machine, you know, the ultimate driving machine, now kind of wants us to sit back and just let the car drive for us a little bit because no more manual transmission. So I don't know what to say about that. What do you think?
Yeah, I know. We'd hate to think the ultimate driving machine becomes the autonomous driving machine. But I think that's the way things are going. And it's perfect timing because 3 days ago, I was up driving a bunch of cars on the streets of Willow, the racetrack down here near Los Angeles, for our performance testing at Kelley Blue Book. And one of the cars, we had 7 cars out there, one of them had an automatic. The other 6 had manual transmissions, Miatas and WRXs and Honda Civic Type Rs. And then we had a Camaro and a Challenger with manuals and a Mustang with an automatic. And it so put the Mustang at a disadvantage, the level of connection to the car and driving around that track, and you're not heel and toeing, you know, downshifting into corners, and you're not revving the engine and throwing that that shifter around. And the Mustang wasn't slower, but the idea that you were enjoying and engaged in the driving process was substantially reduced because of that lack of a manual. And, you know, I thought that was interesting to have that experience right after hearing this about the 3 Series last week. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate.
It irks me a little bit. On the other hand, I get it. We were talking about that with Josh, just a taste. It's probably, you know, makes the whole manufacturing process easier just to offer one thing. But I drove my Viper ACR yesterday for a couple hours, and I literally had to not stop driving, but in my mind go, oh my God, wait a minute. I need to do a heel toe downshift, which means you use your heel and your toe to manipulate 2 pedals, right? So you're, and this is a kind of a skill set thing for car guys and gals. And I was like, oh, I have to think about how to do this for a second because everything I've driven is automatic.
Yeah. Ugh. It's a dying skill set.
It is.
But yes, it is.
Yeah. All right. Hang tight. We're going to talk about auto show season coming on us, the Paris Auto Show, LA Auto Show in November with Carl Brower. This is The Drive. Don't go anywhere. On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet, the new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance. Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor, our show brought to you in part by Brembo, the choice of champions. Brembo brakes. They are the choice of champions. All my cars have Brembo. Carl Brower joining us, Auto Trader, Kelley Blue Book, and Dealer.com. He is the executive publisher. He is a car guy first. Carl, it's very interesting, you know, that for a moment there, I had lost the intuitive shifting, you know, capabilities to where I was coming up to a space where I needed to downshift. I was actually rolling with some pretty good speed. Now, this car can do it. It's a Viper ACR, American Club Racer. It's designed to be a race car on the street. But I was like, oh, yeah, that thing called heel toe downshift. And it was, there was a fraction of a second where I momentarily thought, shift car, shift. And then I realized I was in control, you know, kind of weird. I mean, it was the aha moment of, uh-oh, are we having it taught out of us, you know, to not.
And it's scary. Alex, it took decades for me. I mean, literally, it took a while for me to get to that point. I honestly, I was not a big heel and toeer, like, for a good chunk of my time after I got my license. But in probably my mid-30s, I mastered the art through repeated, you know, track schools and experiences at racetracks. And then all of a sudden I was doing it on ramps and slowing down for stop signs and stuff like that. And it's like, wow, this is really ingrained in me. And I haven't lost it yet. I still find myself doing it when I'm driving to work in a manual. And, you know, it was a great turn that I know how to heel and toe down for. But I could see it starting to fade if I don't ever drive these cars anymore. And apparently that's the way all the manufacturers in the world wants us to go. No more three pedals.
Well, here's the deal. I will tell you where I learned how to do a heel-toe downshift. It was because I drove a truck back in the early 70s. I realize this is before you were born, but I was just at the driving age, and somebody says, you got a double clutch and blip the throttle to downshift this truck because there were no synchros. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And so all you old guys and gals out there that are old enough to remember the non-synchro transmission where you had to rev match. You had to bring the engine up because it would go otherwise. Grinding gears, they'd say, grind me a pound, Mac. You know, those days are gone. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the only time you get a grind is if you miss the shift completely and, you know, there you go. Of which I did in my Shelby GT500 one time. I had to have the transmission fixed. Oopsies.
But you know, and you know this, Alan, if you're in a really good manual transmission, and I'll just, you know, throw out like the Civic Type R as a good example of that. You know, another one that I always think about was the Audi R8 or any Ferrari that's got those metal gated shifts, the metal gates, you know, for the shifter. So the shifter slides between metal. And it's like the most satisfying sound, feel, lateral G experience. If you're going into corners, you know, and it's like, boom, you know, you roll on that throttle and you hit the brake at the same time. And you hear this, you know, like, you know, rifle bolt action through the transmission as you slam the gear. It's great. Yeah. And you just don't get that with an auto. You never will.
Well, here's something I don't like since we're talking about this, because this is a big deal for car guys. Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. If Carl and I are geeking out on manual transmission, they're going away. They're slowly going away, hence the reasons why classic cars are going to become more and more valuable. You watch them going up all the time at these auctions that we all see on television. They're going up because they're being replaced with autonomous cars, manumatic even, if there is a manual. Like, I watch these things. I get in a car one time, and I went to go downshift, and before I could blip the throttle blipped for me. It was a Z car. The new Nissan Z.
Yep.
I haven't driven one in a while. And it blipped the throttle. It what do they call it? Rev matched for me. In other words, they're dumbing down the drivers to where all you do is sit there with your thumb in your mouth like Linus holding onto your blanket. You know, it's like, what are we going to be behind the wheel? We're going to lose our joy of farfignug and the joy of driving, you know? Not even Volkswagen. Stop using the word Volkswagen. Wake up. Come back to Farfignugen, the joy of driving. Oh, my God.
It's true.
The German person's going to go. The Germans are going to go, that does not mean joy of driving. That means strudel sandwich with noodles and mustard. Anyway. All right. So real quick, and then we're going to take another break. What's going on with the auto shows? I mean, the Paris Auto Show. I've been before. It used to be fantastic. It was wonderful. And now it's like, you know, you go there to eat.
It's true. There's all these empty spaces that didn't used to be there. And there's a much bigger empty spaces on the schedule of manufacturer introductions. And the truth is, Alan, the manufacturers have realized, look, we're spending all sorts of money, millions of dollars, to set up a stand and to set up a press conference to be one of 20 other people doing that in a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
And we could spend that same money and have an entire evening at our own venue that we control everything instead of 20 minutes as part of 20 other cars.
We'll talk a little more on this on the other side. And then a test drive, Mercedes-AMG GT four-door with Carl Brower, Kelley Blue Book. We'll be right back. My dad is a proud doer. Always building, repairing, or maintaining something. He relies on Craftsman tools, and I do the same.
Today, Craftsman Mechanics tools, metal storage, and lighting are available from your favorite retailers. But that's only the beginning. A full line of retooled and refined products are on the way. Find your favorite store at craftsman.com and stay tuned for more big news from this trusted American brand.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Hey, our program brought to you in part by Craftsman. We build pride. You can find them now in Lowe's and Ace Hardware. The company's kind of reinventing itself. Carl Brower joining us, Auto Trader, Kelley Blue Book, and Dealer.com. He is the executive publisher. You can always find him also at carlbrower.com. KBB.com, the Bible of the automotive industry. All dealers use KBB to find out what the vehicles are worth and should sell for, what they should pay for them, the residual values of leases and all that kind of stuff. Carl, I just wanted to make a sound effect, all right, just so that people can understand. That's me sucking my thumb. That's us if we don't continue to say, I want a manual transmission in my sports car. But here's the problem. Carl, you're getting a new Ford GT here pretty soon. If you're lucky as you've continued to be lucky, and if you're continuing to be lucky, you will get that car. But it's not offered with a manual transmission, is it?
Nope.
No.
Like every modern supercar. I mean, you look at Porsche, they're the holdouts, right? You still get like certain 911 high-performance models with three pedals. And, of course, when they came out with that 911R like a year plus ago, and it only came with a manual transmission. What happened, Alan? People stepped on each other to get that thing, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
The bidding was going up. Everyone wanted one, you know. So there is a diehard group. It's not a huge group. And that's, I mean, it's not like I'm thinking, you know, we should be making, you know, I don't know, Toyota Camrys with manuals or RAV4s or CRVs. Because no one's going to buy those. The driver for those cars, you know, the percentage that are going to want three pedals, nobody's going to buy those cars. But when you can't get a Ferrari with three pedals, you can't get, you know, a McLaren with three pedals. I don't know. It seems like, guys, this is my solution to this, because everyone's going to say it's cost. Nobody orders it. Look, charge an extra $50,000 for the three pedal version if that's what you have to do to make it make sense on a spreadsheet, you
right.
know, on the business case, because you will have a couple people who will say that makes it even cooler that they're going to make it so expensive hardly anyone's going to buy one. I'm going to be one of those hardly anyone, and I'm going to have one of those cars, and then it's going to be collectible and it's worth all this money years down the line. You can always come up with the engineering to make the three pedal version work, even if it costs a lot of money. Somebody or some bodies will still buy that version.
Well, we have actually reached the ultimate top of the bell-shaped curve, and now everything goes downhill. And in many ways, like this,
yeah,
listen, it's a beautiful time to be alive in the auto industry for so many reasons, because of technology, safety. I was just driving the Ford Edge GT with Ford Motor Company in Park City, Utah the other day, and it's like, you know, I don't know, I was trying to change the radio and I didn't know how, and I was like smacking the dashboard, and all of a sudden the guy in front of me stopped short, because, you know, I mean, it's things in cars are not intuitive anymore, to where you go, I want to turn the radio up, I'll twist that knob, you know, a little rotary knob I'm used to twisting my entire life. It's, you know, some of these cars don't have them. You got to up, you got to poke the little touch screen a couple times. I love touch screen, but please give us a kind of a combination of these two. Car stopped for me, so I didn't rear end somebody while I'm trying to navigate the radio on the car. So we have forward collision, you know, systems and backup collision systems and lane keep, you know, this lane keep stuff. You can almost not have to drive. It's keeping you in the center of the lane. And I mean, I think to myself, man, what do they call it? Like a 360 suite of technology. And the cars are really starting to dumb down the drivers. And the reason is because some drivers are dumb. And I get it. I get it. I get it. But there are a group of us, like you said, that we still want to have
radial knobs or whatever they call an actual knob. The point is that, well, you know, it's coming to that point, you know, it's scary.
Well, and it makes sense, you know, things that are variable, you know, an on-off switch, fine, give me some button because it's one or the other. If there's a variable circumstance, a variable amount of volume, a variable amount of bass or treble that I want to, you know, tune easily while I listen or carefully adjust, there's no way to do that except, you know, better than a knob. That's the only way to do it as effectively as possible. Everything else is a compromise. But, you know, it's much cheaper to have a button and a user interface in a built-in touchscreen than it is right. to have, you know, a spring and a knob and a bearing.
Well, and having 45, like I'm looking at a Mackie board, Mackie being the brand, a mixer board. There must be 300 knobs on this mixer board I'm looking at. You can't possibly have those on a dash. So I get it. I get it. But for the up down volume, give me a knob.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess we've ranted on this. It's just kind of sad. But on the other hand, that is why we will always love our classic cars. And even my Viper. It's very,
right.
It's got a good mix of, you know, technologies, but they left the driver to be in total control and do not turn off the traction control on some of these cars unless you are a professional. And I'm not a professional. They call us professional drivers, but let me tell you, these cars are so powerful these days that I think professionals dare not turn off all these nannies that they have, these emergency, you know, systems for traction control and all that stuff.
Well, it's an end of an era, like you say. I mean, that's why the 05, 06 Ford GTs, I mean, that was the last bastion of not having traction and stability.
Yeah.
Those became required not that long afterwards. So to have a car with three pedals, no reverse camera, and no traction or stability control, that's why that era, that mid-2000s, and then your Viper is literally the last one, does have, you know, some traction and stability, but it's still a driver's car, like you said.
Exactly. All right, we're going to come back and talk about this test drive now, the AMG GT four-door. I chose not to go on this trip. I don't know why. I guess the technology thing is bumming me out. I'm leaning into classic cars lately. It's killing me. We'll be right back. It's The Drive.
You can spend this fall hauling bags of leaves to the curb or hauling. Hurry in to your local Dodge dealership for great deals on Dodge Charger with 292 horsepower and 30 mpg highway. Dodge Challenger, the most affordable V8 in its class. And Dodge Durango. This fall, get great deals at your local Dodge dealership. EPA estimated MPG. Actual results may vary based on Ward's Middle Specialty segment. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Joining us right now, Carl Brower. He is the executive publisher for Auto Trader. Oh, 20 million monthly users. Kelley Blue Book. Oh, 25 million monthly users. Dealer.com. Couldn't tell you, but these are the folks that really know their shiznit. That's all there is to it. I didn't actually swear there, just so you know. That was a twisted word that I made up. Carl.
He just threaded that needle. Very good.
Shiznit. That's a word. You know, you can kind of just twist it. So this Mercedes you drove, I opted out on this one. I love AMG. I love Mercedes-Benz. Give us a little bit. This is a four-door. You guys were in Austin, Texas, driving around there. Did you get to a racetrack out there by any chance?
We did. We went to the famous Circuit of the Americas, Dakota, as it's often referred to.
If I had known that, I probably would have gone. But anyway, go ahead.
It was a blast. So you know, this is a great vehicle for Mercedes-Benz. Their performance division that they've had for several years now, Mercedes-AMG. It's called Mercedes-AMG. And it just does all the high-performance cars that are kind of spun off of their more mainstream ones. But this car is kind of like that two-door car they've got. A unique to their brand only. There is no like Mercedes-Benz version of this car. It's the AMG GT four-door.
Oh.
And it looks much like a Panamera in its overall proportions. You know, it's another one of these very sleek, swoopy cars that has four doors and a very functional rear seat. And it's, you know, built on an advanced chassis, and it's got three different engines that it's going to come out with.
two V8s and a six, twin turbo six and two twin turbo V8s, 4 liter or 3 liter on the sizes. And the top one, Alan, makes 630 horsepower.
Oh, my gosh.
Precisely. That's exactly what I said. And so we were able to run that thing around the racetrack and, you know, basically confirm what you might guess on a vehicle like that, that, you know, you're going to be, you know, hauling the mail. The 0-60 time on the top end one, that's the AMG 63S, the 630 horsepower one, is 3.1 seconds. It's got all-wheel drive, so there's no traction issues. So it's a four-door car, the 0-60 and 3.1. Top speed is 195 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
And nine-speed, you know, multi-clutch tranny, as you and I were just discussing. Of course, right. Two pedals in the floor and paddles that shift, but it shifts extremely quickly and accurately. And, everything you would expect something to have the words AMG or the letters AMG pasted on it, from styling to capabilities, it's got it. And it was quite thrilling to drive. And beautiful seats. It had these great Recaro seats that I just loved sitting in because it really held you tight. And, Brembo brakes, like you were talking about earlier, and all the trademark things you expect from a top-end, no-compromise performance car. This one just happens to seat four people very comfortably.
All right, now let me ask you. We're talking about a pile of money, aren't we?
Well, they have not committed to price announcements yet. The car will be available in early 2019. They did not give us a price.
What would you
but
guess?
I think, you know, well, the Panamera starts at 85,
right.
And I think even the base version of this car, which is the six-cylinder twin turbo, I think is still faster than the Panamera.
So we're talking, so for those easily, who don't know, by the way, the Porsche Panamera, because us car guys, we throw these names around, but Porsche Panamera is the four-door Porsche car versus SUV. And this is, he's saying, mm-hmm. This is a similar look and ilk to that, low-slung, hot AMG, big horsepower. And but yeah, I'm thinking a buck and a quarter anyway.
I think you'll be lucky if the base is below six figures, probably won't be.
Right.
And I think by the time you're into a 630 horsepower version that does 195 miles an hour and has all sorts of technology, as far as, you know, like we were talking about, the driver assist, you know, semi-autonomous is all included too. Yeah, I'm sure you're approaching twice that. I think you could easily be heading toward $200,000.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know,
I mean, I'm just speculating. Yeah. Mercedes is going to kill me if I'm way wrong, but it wouldn't surprise me, and I don't think he'd necessarily be a bad deal either. I've driven his car. It's, you know, if you want to carry more than two people as rapidly as you can, this is going to be hard to beat. 3.10-60.
Right.
3.1, right? I mean, hypercars that do three or better are considered, you know, McLaren P1s and all these, you know, million-dollar hypercars, if they can break into the 2.9s, they're considered, you know, top of the world right now. And this is a 3.1.
I must have been, I think what happened was maybe I was at the New York Fashion Week when that was going on. I had to make a choice. I think I blew it. Okay, I'll admit it. Wow. All right. Wow. Well, you know what? Mercedes-Benz, I can't wait to get behind the wheel. Can we shift gears for a moment and talk about the Demons, the Dodge Demons? Carl and I both have a Dodge Demon. At Barrett-Jackson, just in Las Vegas here recently, I do the Motor Trend live stage for Barrett-Jackson and Motor Trend. And there was three Dodge Demons, one about 150,000, maybe closer to 160,000 with fees and everything. The next one was a little more than that. And the third one was just under $200,000. I do believe that you and I both have lower serial numbers because they only made 3,300 total Dodge Demons, 1 year only car. And I have serial number 8. I don't know. What is your 7,500? What is it?
75, yeah.
So I have a feeling that now here is a car, you and I, and you have two of them. And I'm hoping my Viper, Carl and I, because we watch what's going on, these cars have gone up in value. The window sticker on the car was like 89,000 or 91,000. You couldn't buy them for that. And they're still, I've had my car 10 months. Still worth more
crazy.
Than I paid for it.
I had not heard those numbers, Alan. That is just completely. If you'd asked me to guess those numbers, I would have been, you know, I'd have been like between, you know, 110 and 130 was what have been my guess.
No, they are holding their value. And the same thing with the Ford GT. We're talking $1 million, and you know the people that are buying them, like Carl, cannot sell them or he'll get sued. I mean, what Where do you hear this stuff? I love it. That's what I love about the industry right now is that it's the weirdest of times. It's the best of times. It's the safest of times. Carl, you've been fantastic. I don't know what to say, but otherwise,
great being on with you, Alan. There's stuff. There's more Forge GT. I know stuff that I can't say yet, but October 30th, give or take, SEMA show. Expect some more cool Forge GT info.
So. Awesome. CarlBrower.com. You can find him personally or KBB, Kelly Blue Book, KBB.com, AutoTrader.com, Dealer.com. Carl Brower, one of the best in the industry. Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it.
Hey, good talking to you as always, Alan.
BJ is coming up next. BJ Colleen, and the energy goes up. You know, Carl's a little low energy. He can't help himself. He's an executive publisher, for goodness sakes. I'll be right back. Have you ever tried to plan a vacation and the hotel cost, airfare, and pet sitter all add up to one big never mind? Well, it's time to embrace the adventure and go RVing instead. GoRVing.com is your one-stop shop for all things RV camping. Browse the different types of RVs, find a rental agent or dealer near you, and compare the costs. Explore more than 16,000 RV parks and campgrounds nationwide, and even plan your menus for the trip. Find out what you've been missing at GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
And now joining us is my bestest buddy, my bestie, BFFE, BJ. BJ Colleen.
Hello.
Hello. So
I missed my border last week.
Your border? What do you mean?
You. I make money off of, you know, your reservation and you.
Staying at your place.
Yeah.
I know. Well, the bathroom wasn't done, so you wouldn't cut the price in half, so no way. Sorry.
That's true. It is now, so we're good to go.
Oh, good. So last time we saw each other was at Barrett Jackson. Did you see anything fun?
Well, I saw you, and that's about as fun as it gets. But if you're talking about cars, you know, it's interesting. So talking about Barrett Jackson, it happened last week in Las Vegas. And, you know, usually it's a pretty good show, but it was kind of interesting this week because, first of all, there were a lot of trucks. I mean, a lot of trucks.
Yeah.
And a lot of Chevy SSRs. So it's interesting because here's a vehicle, you know, that was promised for 6 years. It finally came out. It sold like hotcakes and then it just died.
Right.
And so I don't know if a lot of people were buying them as collector vehicles or just, you know, what it was. But now they're all turning up on the auction block. So how many did we see? Like, were there like six or seven or something?
Oh, I think there was only like three or four. But I mean, I didn't walk the entire thing. You may have seen more than I did.
Yeah. We saw a lot of them. And we kept saying, hey, look, there's another one here. There's another one. You know, it was kind of interesting. Yeah. So.
The one that got away, I will tell you, and I would have bought it my own self, and I said that probably 50 times. I was doing hosting the Motor Trend Live Stage, which is the second stage experience at Barrett Jackson Collector Car Auctions. You guys have probably seen it on Discovery Networks. What is it? Velocity Channel.
Right.
But the one that got away was a Lingenfelter SSR. Yep. Now, what is an SSR? It's like a truck that is retro design. It was made in like 2004, 5, 6, whenever.
Six,
whenever.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
I think six, yeah.
Yep. And it has a retractable hard top, right? So it's a convertible pickup truck. But the Lingenfelter one was supercharged V8. And I don't think it sold for, I don't know, maybe 15, 18,000. It only had like 10,000 original miles.
It would have 1,000 horsepower or something ridiculous.
Well,
like that.
I don't know how many it had, but I mean, that person bought that vehicle for probably what they paid Lingenfelter to put the supercharger on it, you know?
Yeah, and they stole it.
Yeah. So there are definitely some amazing deals. And I think in Vegas this year, there was some absolutely amazing buys that I would have bought. And I'm just glad that I don't have 10 cents, you know what I mean? Two nickels to rub together. Because at this point, I'm card out. I have my Demon and my Viper and a Dodge truck. And I think that for my age, I've got my bucket list covered for the moment. For a while till I decide to sell something and make some money. Or make some money. How's that? But, I mean, there was so many fantastic buys. I just kept going, I would have bought that. So, you know what? A lot of people say, oh, Barrett Jackson, you know, the stuff brings super high. Some of it does bring super high prices.
But just like every auction, it is an auction. And if you're paying attention, you could get some deals.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, Scott and I were watching, you know, before we went over there on Saturday, and we're like, I mean, a Bentley went for like $25,000. That was a $200,000 car, brand new. It's like, it still looked good, you know. It's yeah. like, the problem with that is you got to afford the maintenance on it. You know, that's the hard start. But right. The car is just freaking awesome. We kept saying, boy, is that a Vegas car? Drive that around. It would just be cool.
By the way, I was bidding on that.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was bidding on it. And I thought well, if that goes for what it looks like it may go for, so I think I bid 20 or 21, uh-huh. or maybe, I don't know. I think I hit it twice because I was up in the skybox. But then the funny part was there was a 2007 Ford Shelby GT500 convertible black on black, just like the one I had. Remember that?
Right, right.
And it only had like, I don't know, 2,000 miles. Here's a, you know, 12-year-old car with 2,000 miles. And here I'm on the stage in front of, you know, live audience and then streaming live on their web, probably had thousands of people watching worldwide. And all of a sudden my phone rings and I look at it and it was my buddy who was going to bid on it for me because I had to be on stage. And he goes, you want it? And I go, how much is it? He goes, 35. I go, hit it. 36, 37, hit it. Anyway, it got to 40 grand. I go, okay, stop. I thought I could buy it, but it was so funny. I'm having to do this while I'm, you know, now there's two guys talking. They're like, what are you doing? You're on your phone and you're on television. But, you know,
you're multitasking, but you gotta realize, you know, a lot of people think, oh, 40,000 is great. But then again, you've got the 10%. I think it's a 10% that you have to add on top of that sale.
Right.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. So don't forget, you know, a great 40. Well, really, it's 44. And then you got to ship it home. So, you know, you got to think about all this little stuff. But the one vehicle that we saw that was kind of cool, a 1997 Acura Integra Type R. It was a JDM, a Japanese domestic model. It sold for $63,800. And, you know, the Integra was a fun little vehicle. And it's just interesting to see how these Japanese vehicles are gaining traction. Like the Toyota pickups, the off-road pickups are still doing very well here. You know, we were just stunned at some of the things that we saw. So overall, you're right. It was amazing values to be had, especially on the early days, you know, when they first start bidding, the cars come in. Because usually, traditionally, Saturday night is the one
where they make the
big night to make the most money. And they did. But it's all these other little cars. You know, I mean, last year at Barrett Jackson, there were so many E-Type Jaguars. We didn't see a single one this time, not a single one. It was so many trucks and a lot of Mustangs, a lot of muscle cars, and also the replica of Smokey and the Bandit car that sold for $192,500. So.
Right.
You know, again, not the actual movie car, but a recreation. And,
but
you know,
it was owned by Burt Reynolds, so.
Yes, it was at one point. But the fact is that they're instantly recognizable worldwide, so it's great.
Yep. All right, let's take a little break. I'm proud to be associated with Barrett Jackson because they've also raised over $100 million for charities like the American Heart Association, where they once again raised like $300,000 selling a car. We're going to come back with more BJ Colleen right here on The Drive. Stay with us.
All right. I'll be the one to tuck you in at night. And if you want
stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
There are many words you could use to describe the new Kia Stinger GT. Stunning. Stylish. Sporty. The word breathtaking, however, isn't just an adjective. It's a warning. Because while the ability to go 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds might take your breath away, going 60 to 0 with powerful Brembo brakes will help you catch it again. The 2018 Kia Stinger GT, fueled by youth. Stinger GT rear-wheel drive using launch control with factory-equipped 19-inch wheels. Results may vary. Do not attempt. Always drive safely. Whenever I've got BJ Colleen on the line, I do feel good because she's a good person. She's my friend. You're listening to The Drive. BJ, I know the Paris Auto Show was going on and there just wasn't a lot of news that I
that I saw. I mean, you know, listen, I'm only going by what I saw go across Facebook, and it was like the big thing was that BMW, the 3 Series, only available in an automatic transmission, and for the ultimate driving machine to not even offer a manual was kind of weird, but we beat the hell out of that, Carl and I did, but I just didn't see a whole lot going on. The auto shows seemed to be just sucking wind.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, the auto shows used to be cool because you were always excited about some really bizarre, crazy, far-out concept that the manufacturers were going to do. And whether they ever built it or not, the fact that, hey, this is what they're thinking of, and this is kind of cool. And they don't really have that anymore because they can't afford to spend that kind of money, that kind of time on vehicles that are never going to see the light of day.
Well, so, and we're a global market these days, so they got to spread it farther. I mean, China, right?
Yeah, China's another big area, but China's an interesting story because you know what's going on with the trade talks and, right. and Trump trying to keep everything in, built in America and not wanting to pay the tariffs that they're asking and the fight between China and U.S. and tariffs. And so what's interesting is that it is definitely, and obviously it always does, first affect the auto industry. So Jaguar Land Rover just said that they're going to shut one of their plants for 2 weeks after the sales slump in China. I mean, the truth is the Jaguar Land Rover reported a 46% slide in
Whoa.
September sales to customers in China.
Man.
That's huge because this is the company's largest market, you know, so it's ginormous. And you think about that's Jaguar and Land Rover. We know that Ford sales were down, so Lincoln's heavily invested over there. General Motors is really invested over there. So, you know, what do you do? What are the manufacturers thinking? I mean, you and I believe that jobs should stay in America. I mean, let's make our market strong, and then we can go and think about doing other things. But tariff trades, they need to be fair. Mm. But, you know, it's interesting because if this is happening now, it's hurting China. There's no question. China's got some problems going on right now fighting this tariff and starting to lose power because those who have the best economy are going to be the most powerful in the world. That's just all there is to it.
Well,
so.
And here's another factor. Look, I mean, I am American. I live in America. I love America. I love what America stands for. And I know many people, geez, I should be playing the Star Spangled Banner. But anyway, the point is that when you see the Chinese buying America a little piece at a time, and we're enabling that through our poor deals that we've made in the past, I support what is going on to make America a better place to manufacture. I was going to say make America great again. Oh, anyway, but you know what I'm saying, right? We
yes.
should have our manufacturing going on here. Otherwise, we're going to lose our country. So I am very pleased to say that I love products made in America. And I love that Americans and all people that live in America are working together to make these fantastic products that we're able to enjoy and not sell out our country. So,
and, I'm just going to say, and it is working. His plans are working. There's a big steel company, I don't remember the name, said that they're going to open up a new plant in Gary, Indiana. And anybody that knows Gary, Indiana knows that there's a lot of trouble there. They have no jobs. It's turned into a really kind of poor city, not a good city. So if you open up a steel mill there, you know, you're employing 750 people and you're making products for the United States and the steel will be cheaper because we don't have to import it. I mean, there's a lot of benefit to that. I'm all for trade. I have no problem with trade as long as it's open trade and it's tariffs for everybody. There's no tariffs whatsoever. It's just not right for anybody, no matter it's U.S. or any country, to get the short end of the stick. So, I mean, it's good that we have a new North American agreement between Mexico and U.S. and Canada. So that's a plus, and that's going to help the car manufacturers. But, you know, running off to China because that's where the sales are isn't always the best idea. And unfortunately, it's coming back to bite them in the end. So hopefully things will start to level off and China will start to go, okay, we need the automotive business here and we can use the business here. But, you know, I don't even want to get into the human rights, you know, argument going
right.
on with China and all the other countries there, too. It's just a tough, tough industry because automotive is global. That's all there is to it.
Well, you know what? All I can say is that I am glad to see our economy doing better. I am glad to see that this president is making America a better place to manufacture products that we sell here. And that is going to have a ripple effect that'll help generations to come. No matter how unpopular he is right now, the benefactor
of all of what he's doing is us. We are the benefactors of all of what he's doing. He's already a billionaire. He's like he said, I've already got money. I'm doing this for you. I believe the guy. Anyway.
I do too.
All right, BJ, I love you. Thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure as always.
Also, big kudos to Brembo and Dan Sandberg because they just built a new foundry in Detroit, Michigan. So there you have it. All right, we'll see you all next week. Same time, same channel. This is The Drive.
If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time. All while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.